Welcome back to the Joe Clyde Daniels case. This is episode 2. I'm Rachel Underwood, and all I think about is crime. Here's a quick recap from episode 1 as to where we are in the search. At this point, Sergeant Daniel Baker has had the initial conversation with the parents, and by 8 a.m., he's picked up by the Tennessee Highway Patrol helicopter, and they're circling the area. The TBI airplane is on the way with infrared cameras to do a wider search of the area. And as you would think, there's a lot going on all at the same time and at a very fast pace. So I'm going to try to stay with the linear timeline as much as possible, but it may become necessary to jump around a little bit just because of the way the information is going to flow in from different aspects of the search. But as much as possible, we'll stay true to the timeline. If there is a fact that is here that we want to cover and there's a story behind it, I'll go ahead and hit that, and then we'll jump back onto the timeline where we left off. But there may be some jumping up and back a little just to cover some of the information. Okay, here we go. The first canine handler, Dixon County Sheriff's Deputy Timothy Simmons, arrives on scene before 8 a.m. and needs to talk with Crystal and Joseph so that he can get a scent article to start tracking with canines. He parks his car on the side of the road in front of the Daniels' home, and he waits. He has to wait because after the first conversation with the police, Joseph and Crystal leave their home in Joseph's car. Deputy Simmons' dash cam video captures Joseph's car coming towards him and towards his car. Crystal gets out of Joseph's car and walks in front of the deputy's car, but Joseph's car leaves again, going the opposite direction down Garners Creek Road, away from his home. So, what are Joseph and Crystal doing? Where had they been? Are they driving around looking for Joe Clyde? Maybe. But now, Joseph is leaving again. And you would think that they would realize that law enforcement and first responders are gearing up for this search and that they may be needed on site to provide additional information, but they leave. Okay. Around 8:30 a.m., Sergeant Trevor Daniel arrives and is asked to re-interview Joseph Daniels. And so it may sound confusing with some of these names. Now we have Sergeant Daniel, and he has no S on the end of his name. And we have the family with the last name of Daniels. So we have Sergeant Trevor Daniel, and we have Joseph and Crystal Daniels. So there we go. Joseph is still out driving around, and Crystal calls Joseph and asks him to return back to home to be interviewed. While they're waiting for Joseph to arrive back at home, a Dixon County Sheriff's Office detective, Sarah McCartney, arrives on scene a little after 9 and goes inside the home where Trevor Daniel is talking with Crystal. Joseph arrives back home around 9:20 a.m., and we know this because Joseph's car pulls in front of the Dixon County EMA dog team vehicle, and it's again recorded on the dash cam. Okay, so now Joseph is back home. Sergeant Daniel, who's now been waiting for just shy of an hour, can start the deeper interview with the parents and see if they can figure out any additional information that could help find Joe Clyde. During their conversation, Joseph goes through the details, starting with when he woke up that morning. So he says he wakes up at 5:30 a.m., he goes to the boys' bedroom to get their clothes for school. He starts walking back down the hallway, and he notices at that point that the coffee table is turned 90 degrees from the door that they use to come in and out of the home. And I'm not going to say front door here because it's not the front door, but this is the door that they use to come in and out of the home. And the way that the coffee table is positioned is not the normal position of the coffee table. Then he looked at the lock and noticed it was gone. And this is, if you'll remember, the padlock from the episode one. They keep a padlock on their front door. He notices that this is gone. Then he went to look for Joe Clyde and noticed that he was gone. At this point, having heard the recounting of the details, Sergeant Daniel leaves Joseph and Crystal's home and begins helping with the search. Additional search teams are continuing to arrive in the area and are deployed as the search is expanding. The two lead agencies here are Dixon County Sheriff's Office, and they have their deputies and detectives on site. And, of course, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation has sent their plane in, and they have additional agents arriving and assisting. The Tennessee Highway Patrol, or THP, is also there providing the aviation support. Troopers are helping with the scene with search and also helping to provide traffic control. This area is about, I would say their house is like maybe a block, what would be considered a block away from a major highway. And so they're going to need some traffic assistance at some point, they know. They also have a mobile command unit trailer on site and are going to coordinate parking logistics for the volunteers that they will have arriving. The Tennessee Emergency Management Agency is on site, or they're referred to as TEMA, and they are going to be crucial with the overall command center. They have a mobile command unit that's computerized and has mobile dispatchability. They have a system that's going to help with the GPS search. So they're getting set up at this point. Murray County Office of Emergency Management is en route. The Red Cross is arriving to provide the support of just the basic needs on scene. You're in a rural area. They're bringing a mobile restroom trailer, which we know will be so important for all of the personnel on site. They're going to help with food, shelter, and additional personnel to help with the logistics. The surrounding area law enforcement sent teams over to assist as well. And just to name a few, there's the Humphreys County Sheriff's Office, which is the next bordering county from Dixon County, Cheatham County Sheriff's Office, Kingston Springs Police Department, Fairview Police Department, and many others will filter in to the command center throughout the morning and the afternoon. Tennessee Department of Correction sends an additional canine team over. This is the department over the prison system here in Tennessee. The Tennessee Wildlife Resource Agency, or TWRA, they have a specialized water rescue team with underwater robot camera, and this is very similar to a drone. Arrangements at this point are being made for citizen volunteers to be bused in to help with grid searches and GPS searches of the area. And if there's anything that we know for certain about Tennesseans, it's that if a call for help goes out, people will come running. Before the volunteer staging area is fully established, volunteers show up to assist. The volunteer check-in / muster area is really critical because it's where you would want your volunteers to leave their cars and to get organized for their portion of the search. They'll need to be given instructions, and there are certain things when you're volunteering in a search like this. There are certain personal items you're not allowed to take into the search area, and so you need a safe and secure place to leave these things and just to get organized. So at this point, they have not really fully established that area, but we have people coming in already to help assist. And at one point, there's so many cars coming into the area that it causes traffic to come to a standstill on Highway 70, which is the major thoroughfare from this area that someone would take to go directly to or from Nashville in this area. And people who are going to work in Nashville, this is the main artery that they would use to do that in the morning and in the evenings. So you can imagine how that is going to also just compound and be an issue to deal with. So throughout the search, hundreds of volunteers are continuing to show up to assist. People were on ATVs, motorcycles, golf carts. Even a few are reported to have been on skateboards. I know this sounds crazy, but anything that they could think of to move around quickly to search yards, fields, and roadside ditches, anything that they could think of, they used. Just to say a little about a couple of volunteers, there was a Fort Campbell soldier that volunteered. Fort Campbell Army Base is about 50 miles north of Dixon, and Private First Class Lovett had been in Dixon on business. He pulled into a gas station, and he saw some of the commotion going on, and asked someone what was going on, and they told him about baby Joe, about little Joe Clyde Daniels missing. And so he had to go and return to base to check in, but he quickly came back to Dixon as soon as he could and joined the search. Country music artist Craig Morgan is a Dixon County resident and a local business owner. He's a trained first responder and a former Army Ranger, and like so many others, he also joined in on the search. You know, as a matter of fact, there were so many people who wanted to help that eventually the sheriff had to turn people away and even announce on social media that no more volunteers were needed at the moment. Now that they've had another conversation with the parents and the additional search professionals have arrived, what is referred to as a hasty search of the property is conducted and the search is going to expand. This is exactly what it sounds like. Law enforcement clears the home from top to bottom, making sure the child is not somewhere inside the home, maybe just hiding. Then the search will expand outside the house, in the yard, and to any other outbuildings on the property. And from there, it will continue to expand to neighboring properties, roads, other outbuildings just in the vicinity of the Daniels home. So on this day, for the primary search of the Daniels property, the search and rescue team, or SAR team, is made up of 10 people. These are trained law enforcement professionals, and they're split into two three-member teams so that they can search multiple areas on and around the property quickly. When the search expands into the front yard, one of the SAR teams finds that the underground septic tank is uncovered. And I'm sure that they would be thinking that this may be what has happened to him. A child goes outside in the dark, walks right across an open hole, and down he goes. The septic tank is quickly drained and searched, but nothing, except what you would think you would find in a septic tank. The searchers continue on to the back of the home and the property. There's a swing set, a couple of cars, a tractor-trailer truck, a semi and a full tractor-trailer truck back there in the drive, a dry creek bed, trees, and bushes. Plenty of places for a small boy to hide for sure. In the back of the property by the trees and the bushes, one officer notices an area of disturbed ground. And in this disturbed area of ground, he spots a pile of vomit. Records indicate that he notices corn in the vomit. Okay, so for me, this is, or for any of them, this may be a really important indication of something bad that has happened on the property. It could be. It makes me wonder what the family had for dinner the night before. Is this someone who did something to Joe Clyde, and then, you know, they literally, their body could not stomach what they had done, and they are sick. They throw up at the thought of what they had done. They're just sick at their stomach about it. Or, it could just be a kid out playing after dinner, and he did one too many monkey rolls in the grass, or was just playing too rough, and up his supper came. So anyhow, I hope hopefully we'll be able to find out more about this as we find out more information. So while the SAR team continues to search the Daniels property from top to bottom, inside and out, for any trace of Joe Clyde or any indication of where he may have gone, Special Agent Joey Boyd with the TBI arrives for his first assignment on the case. And that's to be attached to a team of U.S. Marshals tasked with checking the homes of registered sex offenders in the area. Records indicate that 6 to 7 offenders' sex offenders' homes were checked on that day. Okay, so I'm curious about the sex offenders in this area. So I'm going to go to the Tennessee Sex Offender Registry list and just see if we can find out what this might look like around where Joe Clyde lives. Let's see. Okay. Okay. So the website I'm going to is the Tennessee Sex Offender Registry list, and the address for that is sor.tbi.tn.gov/home, and I'll put that in the show notes as well. So the first thing I notice when I go to the homepage is a message that says, "Help us find these wanted violators," and then it has a row of mug shots. Let's see what this is. Okay, it looks like there are 1, 2, 3. Looks like there are 17 mug shots of individuals who are currently in violation of the state's sex offender registry law. And there are some of these are highlighted in bold red letters, and above the photo it says offender against children. Okay, so they have sectioned the or highlighted the offenders who have committed some sort of sexual violation of a child. Okay, there are 1, 2, 3. There are 6 people out of the 17 on this violators list who have offenses against children. So, okay. What else here? Okay, if you at the top of this page, looks like there are buttons to, so you can search an individual person, you can sign up for an email alert. I'm assuming you can highlight your area there. You can get the map of offenders. Okay, let's go there. Let's see if we can put in the list for Joe Clyde's area. I know his zip code. I'm going to put in his zip code. Okay, immediately the map populates with a ton of little blue, orange, and gold circles that signify how many offenders are in this area. Let me zoom in on his area. Okay, so it looks like the records from the case indicated that they searched 6 or 7 homes that day surrounding Joe Clyde's home. Looks like I'm seeing some of those. Maybe there are more now than they had then, but there are a lot of dots on this map. I mean, this map is heavily populated with circles that indicate that there are people on the sex offender registry list in this area. So, fascinating. Okay. Okay. It also, just to let you know what else is on this page in case, you wanted to, check it out for yourself. It looks like you can click on the safety and education tab, and it takes you to the, U.S. Department of Justice page. Looks like they have a lot of information here about how to notice the signs of abuse, abusive behaviors, and what to do if you notice any of these things. This looks like some really valuable resources, not only for parents, but anyone who may have a young child in your life or know a young child. So this is a great, great resource. I'll put this in the show notes. I think it would be helpful for every one of us to become familiar with the signs of abuse and abusive behaviors, whether you have a child or not. Remember, if you if there's a child that you know, he may not believe, he or she may not believe that he can speak up if he is being abused, or he may be scared to do so. So, I mean, I really feel like it's our job as an adult to help all children grow up safely. So I would encourage you to go to this website and just look up for yourself the signs of abuse or abusive behaviors. Okay, those will be in the show notes, and back to the investigation. So we have ponds being drained and dragged, cornfields being grid searched, ditches, barns, sheds, brush piles, and parked cars, campers, crawl spaces under the homes. They're all being turned upside down in searching for missing Joe Clyde. But nothing. No signs of him yet. At 12:30 p.m., Sergeant Trevor Daniel is contacted by another member of the sheriff's office who tells him that Joseph wants someone to come and check the trunk of his car. So Sergeant Daniel walks from the command post that is in a field just beside the Daniels' home. He walks from the command post and goes back to the home to meet Joseph. They walk out to Joseph's car. Using his key fob, Joseph unlocks the trunk, and Sergeant Daniel raises it up and looks inside, but nothing. Nothing of note inside the trunk. Joe Clyde is not in there. Is this another thing to add to the list of odd behavior by Joseph? If a son is missing, do you call to schedule a time to look in your trunk, or do you just have that thought and go, oh my gosh, I wonder if he somehow got locked in the trunk, and then you immediately run to the car as fast as you can, throw open the trunk to see if he's in there? Most of us would probably do the latter. You probably would, as soon as you had the thought enter your mind, you would go and check your trunk immediately. So I'm going to put that in the list of odd behaviors of Joe Daniels up to this point. So also going on at the same time, at 1 p.m., a witness drives by the search scene on his way to work and stops to tell a state trooper that he saw a person wearing what he thinks are pajamas on the side of the road around 12:45 a.m. to 1 a.m. that morning. He says it was a black shirt with a skeleton rib cage on it, and it looked like pajamas to him. So this could also be a great lead. At the same time that witness is alerting the THP officer to what he's observed the night before, another interview is taking place inside the Daniels home. And this would be a good time to let you know who lives in this home, because it's a unconventional type of situation for most people. I would say it's unconventional. There are 8 people living inside the home. And when I say the home, this is, we are in a rural area, and it's not uncommon for people to live in what is referred to as a modular home or a mobile home. Some people would call it a double wide, but it's a modular home. There are 8 people who live inside. We have Crystal Daniels, Joseph Ray Daniels, Joe Clyde, who is 5, Noah, who is 3, Alex, who is 8. Joe Clyde and Noah, 3 and 5, they are the children of Joseph Ray Daniels and Crystal Daniels. Alex is 8 years old, and he is the son of Crystal Daniels with another man before she married Joseph Daniels. Also in the home, we have Joseph Daniel Jr., which is actually Joseph Ray Daniels' father. And so he's referred to as Big Joe or Grandpa. And then we have Belle Daniels, who is the wife of Big Joe. and she is referred to as Belle by the children. She is not their biological grandmother, but they call her Belle. And then we also have Aunt Joyce. Aunt Joyce, I believe that Aunt Joyce is Joseph Ray Daniel's aunt, which would also be Joseph Daniel Jr.'s sister. But if I find out that she is an aunt in another way, I will let you know. Anyhow, okay, so we have eight people living inside the home. So, inside the home, there are investigators from multiple response agencies at this point. Two of those are Brent Morse from the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency, or TEMA, and Chad Bailey, who is with the Maury County Office of Emergency Management. Both of these gentlemen are on a specialized search team that have been called in to assist. And Brent Morse is there to conduct a lost person questionnaire. Morse and Bailey overhear a conversation between Noah Daniels, who is the three-year-old younger brother of Joe Clyde, and he's speaking to Aunt Joyce. Again, Aunt Joyce is Joseph Daniels' aunt who lives with them. So the conversation goes like this. Little three-year-old Noah says, "Joe dead? Joe dead? Joe dead?" To which Aunt Joyce responds, "Yes, baby, Joe dead." As of the release of this episode, it's been more than 1,316 days since anyone has seen 5-year-old Joe Clyde Daniels. He has been presumed dead, but his remains have never been found. If you have any information about the circumstances surrounding his disappearance or the whereabouts of his remains, please contact the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation at 1-800-TBI-FIND. That's 1-800-TBI-FIND. I'll have more on this case next week. Thanks for listening. I'm Rachel Underwood, and all I think about is crime.